It's estimated that as many as 2.5 billion people around the world need prescription eyeglasses, but don't have them. Untreated, we know poor vision keeps people from reaching their full potential. Tonight's Brief But Spectacular features an eye doctor looking for new ways to solve the problem.
When I was 12 years old, I was told by my teachers that I was a bit slow, that I wasn't paying attention, and then I was taken for an eye test where they found that I had really poor vision. When I put on a pair of glasses, I saw that trees had leaves on for the first time, and my life took a very different course as a consequence of something so simple. I was aware that the thing that happened to me with a pair of glasses may not have been true if I'd lived somewhere else. And so I wanted to become a doctor, which I then became, and then I became an eye surgeon with this burning desire to change this injustice. Worldwide, there's 2.5 billion people, so one in three, who need a pair of glasses and can't get them. There's 36 million people who are blind, four in every five of whom shouldn't be, because their cause of blindness is curable. In 2011, I left my job as an eye surgeon in the UK, and my wife and our one-year-old son packed our bags and moved to Kenya. We went there because we wanted to really understand the needs of a large population, and to do it, we had to establish 100 eye clinics. And in the course of doing so, just realized how big the scale of the problem was, but also how much potential there was to change lives if this were done differently. When I was working in the field in Kenya, I was taking £100,000 worth of eye equipment and a team of 15 people to understand why people couldn't see and what the causes were. What we then started doing with Peak was creating mobile technology that could do the same assessments, but in the hands of non-specialists. So the first thing that we built was a vision test that could measure somebody's vision in any language. And then we built a tool that would sit on the phone, which would allow you to see inside the eye, so you could see the back of the eye and understand why somebody can't see. When I was working in Kenya, it became apparent how many people had access to a mobile device. I would go to places that had no roads, no electricity and no water, but in those same places, people had a mobile phone. An incredible doctor said to me, in the community that I work, there are children in the schools who can't see. And when I send my nurse from the hospital to go and see them, she finds them, but she spends all day in one school to find around 5% of the children with a problem. And I can no longer afford to send her because the clinic's too busy. So we said, why don't we train teachers to do the same thing? And so teachers started using our Peak Acuity app to measure vision, to get a simulation of what that child could see, and then it would automate a message to that child's parents, to the head teacher, and to the hospital. So suddenly everybody knew that child existed with a solvable problem. The first time we trialled it, 25 teachers screened 21,000 children in just 9 days. We then went on to scale that up to 300,000 children covering the entire district. The government of Botswana has shown incredible leadership and have committed to screen and treat every single school child in the country, making them the first country in the world where an entire generation no longer have to suffer this problem. My name is Dr. Andrew Bastaris, and this is my brief but spectacular take on eradicating avoidable blindness.
So good to hear about that. And you can find more episodes of our Brief But Spectacular series at pbs.org/newshour/brief. It's estimated that as many as 2.5 billion people around the world need prescription eyeglasses, but don't have them. Untreated, we know poor vision keeps people from reaching their full potential. Tonight's Brief But Spectacular features an eye doctor looking for new ways to solve the problem.
When I was 12 years old, I was told by my teachers that I was a bit slow, that I wasn't paying attention, and then I was taken for an eye test where they found that I had really poor vision. When I put on a pair of glasses, I saw that trees had leaves on for the first time, and my life took a very different course as a consequence of something so simple. I was aware that the thing that happened to me with a pair of glasses may not have been true if I'd lived somewhere else. And so I wanted to become a doctor, which I then became, and then I became an eye surgeon with this burning desire to change this injustice. Worldwide, there's 2.5 billion people, so one in three, who need a pair of glasses and can't get them. There's 36 million people who are blind, four in every five of whom shouldn't be, because their cause of blindness is curable. In 2011, I left my job as an eye surgeon in the UK, and my wife and our one-year-old son packed our bags and moved to Kenya. We went there because we wanted to really understand the needs of a large population, and to do it we had to establish 100 eye clinics. And in the course of doing so, just realised how big the scale of the problem was, but also how much potential there was to change lives if this were done differently. When I was working in the field in Kenya, I was taking £100,000 worth of eye equipment and a team of 15 people to understand why people couldn't see and what the causes were. What we then started doing with PEAK was creating mobile technology that could do the same assessments but in the hands of non-specialists. So the first thing that we built was a vision test that could measure somebody's vision in any language. And then we built a tool that would sit on the phone which would allow you to see inside the eye, so you could see the back of the eye and understand why somebody can't see. When I was working in Kenya, it became apparent how many people had access to a mobile device. I would go to places that had no roads, no electricity and no water, but in those same places people had a mobile phone. An incredible doctor said to me, in the community that I work, there are children in the schools who can't see. And when I send my nurse from the hospital to go and see them, she finds them, but she spends all day in one school to find around 5% of the children with a problem. And I can no longer afford to send her because the clinic's too busy. So we said, why don't we train teachers to do the same thing? And so teachers started using our Peak Acuity app to measure vision, to get a simulation of what that child could see, and then it would automate a message to that child's parents, to the head teacher, and to the hospital. So suddenly everybody knew that child existed with a solvable problem. The first time we trialled it, 25 teachers screened 21,000 children in just 9 days. We then went on to scale that up to 300,000 children covering the entire district. The government of Botswana has shown incredible leadership and have committed to screen and treat every single school child in the country, making them the first country in the world where an entire generation no longer have to suffer this problem. My name is Dr. Andrew Bastaris, and this is my brief but spectacular take on eradicating avoidable blindness.
So good to hear about that. And you can find more episodes of our brief but spectacular series at pbs.org/newshour/brief. It's estimated that as many as 2.5 billion people around the world need prescription eyeglasses, but don't have them. Untreated, we know poor vision keeps people from reaching their full potential. Tonight's Brief But Spectacular features an eye doctor looking for new ways to solve the problem.
When I was 12 years old, I was told by my teachers that I was a bit slow, that I wasn't paying attention, and then I was taken for an eye test where they found that I had really poor vision. When I put on a pair of glasses, I saw that trees had leaves on for the first time, and my life took a very different course as a consequence of something so simple. I was aware that the thing that happened to me with a pair of glasses may not have been true if I'd lived somewhere else. And so I wanted to become a doctor, which I then became, and then I became an eye surgeon with this burning desire to change this injustice. Worldwide, there's 2.5 billion people, so one in three, who need a pair of glasses and can't get them. There's 36 million people who are blind, 4 in every 5 of whom shouldn't be, because their cause of blindness is curable. In 2011, I left my job as an eye surgeon in the UK, and my wife and our one-year-old son packed our bags and moved to Kenya. We went there because we wanted to really understand the needs of a large population, and to do it, we had to establish 100 eye clinics. And in the course of doing so, just realised how big the scale of the problem was, but also how much potential there was to change lives if this were done differently. When I was working in the field in Kenya, I was taking £100,000 worth of eye equipment and a team of 15 people to understand why people couldn't see and what the causes were. What we then started doing with PEAK was creating mobile technology that could do the same assessments, but in the hands of non-specialists. So the first thing that we built was a vision test that could measure somebody's vision in any language. And then we built a tool that would sit on the phone which would allow you to see inside the eye, so you could see the back of the eye and understand why somebody can't see. When I was working in Kenya, it became apparent how many people had access to a mobile device. I would go to places that had no roads, no electricity and no water, but in those same places people had a mobile phone. An incredible doctor said to me, in the community that I work, there are children in the schools who can't see. And when I send my nurse from the hospital to go and see them, she finds them, but she spends all day in one school to find around 5% of the children with a problem. And I can no longer afford to send her because the clinic's too busy. So we said, why don't we train teachers to do the same thing? And so teachers started using our peak acuity app to measure vision, to get a simulation of what that child could see, and then it would automate a message to that child's parents, to the head teacher, and to the hospital. So suddenly everybody knew that child existed with a solvable problem. The first time we trialled it, 25 teachers screened 21,000 children in just 9 days. We then went on to scale that up to 300,000 children covering the entire district. The government of Botswana has shown incredible leadership and have committed to screen and treat every single school child in the country, making them the first country in the world where an entire generation no longer have to suffer this problem. My name is Dr. Andrew Bastaris, and this is my brief but spectacular take on eradicating avoidable blindness.
So good to hear about that. And you can find more episodes of our Brief But Spectacular series at pbs.org/newshour/brief.
It won't be too long until the big TV ads like those on Marks and Spencer's, Tesco and John Lewis hit the screens. But with more people tuning away from traditional television, viewing in favour of streaming and catching up, will these multi-million pound advertisements continue to be value for money for those who make them? New research suggests as we watch differently, the shops will have to advertise differently to keep us watching and keep us shopping. Gavin Stirrett is from the marketing firm which commissioned the research.
Consumer behaviour has changed dramatically. Mobile phones are devices that we're spending an increasing amount of time on. Half of us are spending 3 or more hours every day on our phone. And what that translates to at Christmas time is that over 50% of shoppers are using their mobile device at some point to inform the purchases that they're making. I think the Christmas TV ad on linear TV is far from being dead, but I think what this shift in behaviour suggests is that advertisers need to think about not just investing so heavily into getting that TV ad out, let's say during Coronation Street or The X Factor or one of those high viewership programmes. They need to be thinking about how their media plan can reflect this shift in behaviour.
That's Gavin Stirrett from the marketing firm which commissioned the research. Well, Simon Gregory is from the advertising company Bartle Bogle Hegarty, and they've been developing Christmas ads for years and indeed currently working on Tesco's Christmas TV campaign. Simon Gregory, first of all, how critical to retailers, especially at the most important time of people shopping, is the Christmas ad campaign?
Hello. I think there's two ways to think about it, really. I think the first is how important is Christmas in itself to retailers. And as the report that Gavin mentioned, it highlights that for some, Christmas as a trading period is worth up to 30% of sales for many high street retailers. If you look at companies like John Lewis or say Argos, actually a lot of their sales are weighted towards the second half of the year, so Christmas becomes a really important part. And I think in that context, however you market or have you advertise Christmas, it's something that you have to get right, and that's something you want to get all of your eggs into the basket behind. And I think in that light, TV becomes a really important place to be. I think with so many people talking about Christmas, trying to sell different things at different times, you really want something that gives you the best chance to stand out into the market. And TV is still one of those sources of media that lets you do that.
But as Gavin said, you know, if you want your advert in the middle of a very high viewing audience on linear telly like Coronation Street, it's going to be expensive. So will campaign organisers be working out different ways of spending their money to get a bigger audience?
He's right in terms of it is a very expensive place to be. But at the same point, you do see that TV has actually become more profitable for retailers over time as well. Mm. So although it's cost a lot of money to actually do, you actually get good returns for it as well. The way we talk to our clients is less about to TV or not to TV.
Yeah.
It's more about how do you make it work with all of the other channels. So I think one question is, what role do you want the Christmas ad to work actually at the time of the year? Do you want to use it to go, we've got some great sales on, please come and get them in store? Or would you rather be, here's something that we want to capture hearts and minds with to make you think about us for gifting and things like that instead? But you will always be working with online, internet and social media channels to help it at the same time as well.
So ultimately, really, you want your ad to go viral so that people pass it between themselves, don't you?
I mean, that's the gold dust. It's easier said than done. But I think the thing that's so nice about TV is it's one of those platforms that lets you use storytelling, lets you use emotion, lets you use music and filmic production things and so on. And increasingly, as you say, you do see people talking about the best ads on social and even media platforms talking about them in the papers and so on. But I think it all comes back to, if you can make an emotional connection, people will always be much warmer and more and remember much more about your brand, and TV is one of the best places to do that.
It won't be too long until the big TV ads like those on Marks and Spencer's, Tesco and John Lewis hit the screens. But with more people tuning away from traditional television, viewing in favour of streaming and catching up, will these multi-million pound advertisements continue to be value for money for those who make them? New research suggests as we watch differently, the shops will have to advertise differently to keep us watching and keep us shopping. Gavin Stirrett is from the marketing firm which commissioned the research.
Consumer behaviour has changed dramatically. Mobile phones are devices that we're spending an increasing amount of time on. Half of us are spending 3 or more hours every day on our phone. And what that translates to at Christmas time is that over 50% of shoppers are using their mobile device at some point to inform the purchases that they're making. I think the Christmas TV ad on linear TV is far from being dead, but I think what this shift in behaviour suggests is that advertisers need to think about not just investing so heavily into getting that TV ad out, let's say during Coronation Street or The X Factor or one of those high viewership programmes. They need to be thinking about how their media plan can reflect this shift in behaviour.
That's Gavin Stirrett from the marketing firm which commissioned the research. Well, Simon Gregory is from the advertising company Bartle Bogle Hegarty, and they've been developing Christmas ads for years and indeed currently working on Tesco's Christmas TV campaign. Simon Gregory, first of all, how critical to retailers, especially at the most important time of people's shopping, is the Christmas ad campaign?
Hello. I think there's two ways to think about it, really. I think the first is, how important is Christmas in itself to retailers? And as the report that Gavin mentioned, it highlights that for some, Christmas as a trading period is worth up to 30% of sales for many high street retailers. If you look at companies like John Lewis or say Argos, actually a lot of their sales are weighted towards the second half of the year. So Christmas becomes a really important part. And I think in that context, However you market or have you advertise Christmas, it's something that you have to get right, and it's something you want to get all of your eggs into the basket behind. And I think in that light, TV becomes a really important place to be. I think with so many people talking about Christmas, trying to sell different things at different times, you really want something that gives you the best chance to stand out into the market. And TV is still one of those sources of media that lets you do that.
But as Gavin said, you know, if you want your advert in the middle of a very high viewing audience on linear telly like Coronation Street, it's going to be expensive. So will campaign organisers be working out different ways of spending their money to get a bigger audience?
He's right in terms of it is a very expensive place to be. But at the same point, you do see that TV has actually become more profitable for retailers over time as well. Mm. So although it costs a lot of money to actually do, you actually get good returns for it as well. The way we talk to our clients is less about to TV or not to TV.
Yeah.
It's more about how do you make it work with all of the other channels. So I think one question is, what role do you want the Christmas ad to work actually at the time of the year? Do you want to use it to go, we've got some great sales on, please come and get them in store? Or would you rather be, here's something that we want to capture hearts and minds with to make you think about us for gifting and things like that instead? But you will always be working with online, internet and social media channels to help it at the same time as well.
So ultimately, really, you want your ad to go viral so that people pass it between themselves, don't you?
I mean, that's the gold dust. It's easier said than done. But I think the thing that's so nice about TV is it's one of those platforms that lets you use storytelling, lets you use emotion, lets you use music and filmic production things and so on. And increasingly, as you say, you do see people talking about the best ads on social and even media platforms talking about them in the papers and so on. But I think it all comes back to, if you can make an emotional connection, people will always be much warmer and more and remember much more about your brand, and TV is one of the best places to do that.
It won't be too long until the big TV ads like those on Marks and Spencer's, Tesco and John Lewis hit the screens. But with more people tuning away from traditional television, viewing in favour of streaming and catching up, will these multi-million pound advertisements continue to be value for money for those who make them? New research suggests as we watch differently, the shops will have to advertise differently to keep us watching and keep us shopping. Gavin Stirrett is from the marketing firm which commissioned the research.
Consumer behaviour has changed dramatically. Mobile phones are devices that we're spending an increasing amount of time on. Half of us are spending 3 or more hours every day on our phone. And what that translates to at Christmas time is that over 50% of shoppers are using their mobile device at some point to inform the purchases that they're making. I think the Christmas TV ad on linear TV is far from being dead, but I think what this shift in behaviour suggests is that advertisers need to think about not just investing so heavily into getting that TV ad out, let's say during Coronation Street or The X Factor or one of those high viewership programmes. They need to be thinking about how their media plan can reflect this shift in behaviour.
That's Gavin Stirrett from the marketing firm which commissioned the research. Well, Simon Gregory is from the advertising company Bartle Bogle Hegarty, and they've been developing Christmas ads for years and indeed currently working on Tesco's Christmas TV campaign. Simon Gregory, first of all, how critical to retailers, especially at the most important time of people's shopping, is the Christmas ad campaign?
Hello. I think there's two ways to think about it, really. I think the first is, how important is Christmas in itself to retailers? And as the report that Gavin mentioned, it highlights that for some, Christmas as a trading period is worth up to 30% of sales for many high street retailers. If you look at companies like John Lewis or say Argos, actually a lot of their sales are weighted towards the second half of the year. So Christmas becomes a really important part. And I think in that context, However you market or have you advertise Christmas, it's something that you have to get right, and it's something you want to get all of your eggs into the basket behind. And I think in that light, TV becomes a really important place to be. I think with so many people talking about Christmas, trying to sell different things at different times, you really want something that gives you the best chance to stand out into the market. And TV is still one of those sources of media that lets you do that.
But as Gavin said, you know, if you want your advert in the middle of a very high viewing audience on linear telly like Coronation Street, it's going to be expensive. So will campaign organisers be working out different ways of spending their money to get a bigger audience?
He's right in terms of it is a very expensive place to be. But at the same point, you do see that TV has actually become more profitable for retailers over time as well. Mm. So although it costs a lot of money to actually do, you actually get good returns for it as well. The way we talk to our clients is less about to TV or not to TV.
Yeah.
It's more about how do you make it work with all of the other channels. So I think one question is, what role do you want the Christmas ad to work actually at the time of the year? Do you want to use it to go, we've got some great sales on, please come and get them in store? Or do you rather be, here's something that what we want to capture hearts and minds with to make you think about us for gifting and things like that instead? But you will always be working with online, internet and social media channels to help it at the same time as well.
So ultimately, really, you want your ad to go viral so that people pass it between themselves, don't you?
I mean, that's the gold dust. It's easier said than done. But I think the thing that's so nice about TV is it's one of those platforms that lets you use storytelling, lets you use emotion, lets you use music and filmic production things and so on. And increasingly, as you say, you do see people talking about the best ads on social and even media platforms talking about them in the papers and so on. But I think it all comes back to, if you can make an emotional connection, people will always be much warmer and more and remember much more about your brand, and TV is one of the best places to do that.
Markets are all promising to use less plastic packaging. Just a few days ago, Sainsbury's said it would get rid of half of it by 2025. A few weeks ago, Tesco promised to stop selling brands that use excessive packaging. Morrisons and M&S are selling more loose fruit and veg. But they're all warning that some food won't last as long without a plastic wrapper. Cucumbers is usually the example. Well, now Asda is trialling a possible solution. It's an edible coating called Appeal. Appeal was only approved for use in the EU in June, but in America, avocados coated in it are already on sale. The inventor of the coating, James Rogers from Appeal Sciences in California, has given his first UK interview to us, you and yours.
Appeal uses materials that are found in every bite of fruit and vegetable that you eat every single day in order to create a water-based formula that we apply to the surface of fruits and veg that adds a little extra peel. You can't see it, you can't taste it, you can't feel it, but it's there, and it slows down the rate that the fruit loses moisture, and it slows down the rate that the fruit oxidizes. And the result is that the fruit can last 2, 3, 4 times longer without the use of plastic packaging and without the use of refrigeration.
How does it compare with the use of plastic?
In the studies that we've done internally with ASDA and others, we see that the product outperforms the flow wrap that's traditionally used on things like cucumbers.
What have you done with your appeal and ASDA?
ASDA participated in a small trial that we sent mandarins from their supplier La Calera in Peru into the UK where the fruit was received and put all the way through the system onto store shelves at a couple of ASDA stores. And now ASDA has picked up some of the fruit from those stores and doing some holdbacks. And we're early on in the test right now, but the early measurements are suggesting that we're going to see dramatic improvements. In fact, the fruit that arrived, you know, even upon arrival from Peru, we were packing out or saving 150 bags of mandarins per pallet.
So how was it labeled? Did people understand that they were buying something with this tiny bit of extra peel on it?
At this time, this was an unlabeled trial because we haven't formally rolled out the product, but that's something that, of course, as we roll out, every peel piece of produce is labeled.
What about cucumbers then? Are you going to use it on them?
We've already developed the product for cucumbers. We're using that in the United States today, although it hasn't been released commercially yet. We're still waiting for regulatory approval in the EU around cucumbers before we'll be able to do that, but we're hopeful that that will happen shortly.
When I say it was approved for use in the EU in June, was that just for what? Oranges?
The classification was for the categories of avocados, mangoes, pineapples, citrus, pomegranates, and bananas.
Now, is this appeal stuff more expensive than plastic?
No. In most cases, it should be cheaper because of the reduced waste. There's less waste in the store, and so the grocer needs to charge less to the consumer in order to be able to pay for the fruit.
Markets are all promising to use less plastic packaging. Just a few days ago, Sainsbury's said it would get rid of half of it by 2025. A few weeks ago, Tesco promised to stop selling brands that use excessive packaging. Morrisons and M&S are selling more loose fruit and veg. But they're all warning that some food won't last as long without a plastic wrapper. Cucumbers is usually the example. Well, now ASDA is trialling a possible solution. It's an edible coating called Appeal. Appeal was only approved for use in the EU in June, but in America, avocados coated in it are already on sale. The inventor of the coating, James Rogers from Appeal Sciences in California, has given his first UK interview to us, you and yours.
Appeal uses materials that are found in every bite of fruit and vegetable that you eat every single day in order to create a water-based formula that we apply to the surface of fruits and veg. That adds a little extra peel. You can't see it, you can't taste it, you can't feel it, but it's there, and it slows down the rate that the fruit loses moisture, and it slows down the rate that the fruit oxidizes. And the result is that the fruit can last 2, 3, 4 times longer without the use of plastic packaging and without the use of refrigeration.
How does it compare with the use of plastic?
In the studies that we've done internally with ASDA and others, we see that the product outperforms the flow wrap that's traditionally used on things like cucumbers.
What have you done with your appeal and ASDA?
ASDA participated in a small trial that we sent mandarins from their supplier La Calera in Peru into the UK where the fruit was received and put all the way through the system onto store shelves at a couple of ASDA stores. And now ASDA has picked up some of the fruit from those stores and doing some holdbacks. And we're early on in the test right now, but the early measurements are suggesting that we're going to see dramatic improvements. In fact, the fruit that arrived, you know, even upon arrival from Peru, we were packing out or saving 150 bags of mandarins per pallet.
So how was it labeled? Did people understand that they were buying something with this tiny bit of extra peel on it?
At this time, this was an unlabeled trial because we haven't formally rolled out the product, but that's something that, of course, as we roll out, every peel piece of produce is labeled.
What about cucumbers then? Are you going to use it on them?
We've already developed the product for cucumbers. We're using that in the United States today, although it hasn't been released commercially yet. We're still waiting for regulatory approval in the EU around cucumbers before we'll be able to do that, but we're hopeful that that will happen shortly.
When I say it was approved for use in the EU in June, was that just for what? Oranges?
The classification was for the categories of avocados, mangoes, pineapples, citrus, pomegranates, and bananas.
Now, is this peel stuff more expensive than plastic?
No, in most cases it should be cheaper because of the reduced waste. There's less waste in the store, and so the grocer needs to charge less to the consumer in order to be able to pay for the fruit.
Markets are all promising to use less plastic packaging. Just a few days ago, Sainsbury's said it would get rid of half of it by 2025. A few weeks ago, Tesco promised to stop selling brands that use excessive packaging. Morrisons and M&S are selling more loose fruit and veg. But they're all warning that some food won't last as long without a plastic wrapper. Cucumbers is usually the example. Well, now Asda is trialling a possible solution. It's an edible coating called a peel. Appeal was only approved for use in the EU in June, but in America, avocados coated in it are already on sale. The inventor of the coating, James Rogers from Appeal Sciences in California, has given his first UK interview to us, you and yours.
Appeal uses materials that are found in every bite of fruit and vegetable that you eat every single day in order to create a water-based formula that we apply to the surface of fruits and veg. That adds a little extra peel. You can't see it, you can't taste it, you can't feel it, but it's there, and it slows down the rate that the fruit loses moisture, and it slows down the rate that the fruit oxidizes. And the result is that the fruit can last 2, 3, 4 times longer without the use of plastic packaging and without the use of refrigeration.
How does it compare with the use of plastic?
In the studies that we've done internally with Asda and others, we see that the product outperforms the flow wrap that's traditionally used on things like cucumbers.
What have you done with your appeal and Asda?
Asda participated in a small trial that we sent mandarins from their supplier, La Calera, in Peru, into the UK where the fruit was received and put all the way through the system onto store shelves at a couple of Asda stores. And now Asda has picked up some of the fruit from those stores and doing some holdbacks. And we're early on in the test right now, but the early measurements are suggesting that we're going to see dramatic improvements. In fact, the fruit that arrived, you know, even upon arrival from Peru, we were packing out or saving 150 bags of mandarins per pallet.
So how was it labeled? Did people understand that they were buying something with this tiny bit of extra peel on it?
At this time, this was an unlabeled trial because we haven't formally rolled out the product, but that's something that, of course, as we roll out, every peel piece of produce is labeled.
What about cucumbers then? Are you going to use it on them?
We've already developed the product for cucumbers. We're using that in the United States today, although it hasn't been released commercially yet. We're still waiting for regulatory approval in the EU around cucumbers before we'll be able to do that, but we're hopeful that that will happen shortly.
When I say it was approved for use in the EU in June, was that just for what? Oranges?
The classification was for the categories of avocados, mangoes, pineapples, citrus, pomegranates, and bananas.
Now, is this peel stuff more expensive than plastic?
No, in most cases it should be cheaper because of the reduced waste. There's less waste in the store, and so the grocer needs to charge less to the consumer in order to be able to pay for the fruit.